It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. Merry Christmas! And happy holidays to everyone. Adam and I are back. We are going to discuss the DFS game-by-game slate for Saturday, talking through all the plays, stacks, and punts for these three games. Adam, happy holidays, man. What's up?
Yeah, same to you, man. Happy holidays to you and everybody else out there. It's been pretty crazy this week. Basketball season started, so I'm doing basketball and football. And so Joe Metz and I are... Each day we're alternating the written content for NBA, so we're both doing on every other day a game-by-game article and a five-stats-to-know article similar to yours that you started for football this year. And my first day covering the game-by-game article happens to be the 13-game slate we saw on Wednesday. So, yeah, I was pretty busy. I appreciate you doing the waiver pod, but it's been fun. I'm still excited about the rest of the NFL season, but basketball is still, you know, is now back, and I'm happy about that too. So busy times, but a lot of content at FTN as well.
Dude, you've been crushing it. You and Mets have been crushing NBA content, all of the absolute fire that's pouring out of FTNDaily.com right now is fantastic, man. So if people have not gotten signed up, please do so right now. Use the promo code FTC, get signed up, save 10% off of NBA. It is fantastic content, as well as they need to get subscribed, man. They got to go tune into you and Mets' podcast, Top 50 Fantasy Sports Podcast, rocking all kinds of goodies for NBA DFS, man. So check that out on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. It is everywhere.
Yeah, and we will be recording, it's Christmas Eve right now. We will be recording tonight for the Christmas Day slate because it's really right there with the Thanksgiving NFL slate. It's like the best slate of the year. It's so fun. Like I know you might want to cover ears, but I talk about this with Mets. I like the Christmas Day NBA slate a little bit more than the Thanksgiving NFL slate. I'm sorry.
That's tough to hear, but I get it, man. Like, I love these holiday slates. I love these, like last week. All these like Saturday three gamers.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Saturday slate as well. It was a good day.
Dude, it was a good day for me.
Yeah.
I had a fantastic lineup, man. Like, rocking Josh Allen, dude, was just balling out. So many good plays out of those games.
I'm not even talking about it. People will mute me, but... Look, I'll just say, the last time they won the division, I was 2 years old, and I've never been this excited about a Bills team. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that. But yeah, your lineup was... absurd. I mean, that's what happens when you play good players. I mean,
you just play the good plays, man. That's what's up, you know? I mean, what else you got to say, man? I mean, but getting to the Bills, love. I mean, come on, man. I get it. I totally get it. You got to support teams that you love. You got to support good things. And we're talking about support here. I got to mention before we get talking about these three games, support for Fade the Chalk is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, and the Manscaped engineering team has just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. The battery lasts up to 90 minutes. You can use this thing in the shower. It is fantastic. Head over to manscaped.com, use promo code FTN, save 20%, and get free shipping. That's at manscaped.com. Promo code FTN. All right, Adam. Without further ado, man, let's jump into these three games. First one on the docket is Tampa is heading to Detroit. Tampa's favored by 9.5. The over-under is set at 53.5. I know you're going to be into some Marv here because, look, DK was drunk. Like, they must have had the holiday office party early because Marv's price for this game is broken. Like, absolutely broken.
This is probably this might be the worst price of the year. I'm so, like, it's bad. It's really bad. Everybody knows that Marv's like my favorite player in the world, but like still, like if you're just looking at it from a production standpoint of him lately and the player he is, like we know Kenny Galladay's not playing. And since week 10, this is the wide receiver 7 in fantasy. Wide receiver 7. I tweeted out, I think it's Stephon Diggs, Davante Adams, Calvin Ridley, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson. Those are like the only receivers that have scored more fantasy points than Marvin Jones since week 10. During that span, he's 8th in receiving yards, 7th in 100-yard games, 6th in red zone targets. He's averaging 10 targets per game over his last 6. Galladay's out. They're, you know, 9-point underdogs. I don't understand why he's 4,900 on DraftKings. He's going to be popular, and it's like, when you get to points where a player is so egregiously priced that he's going to be popular, it's like, okay, in tournaments, maybe you fade him, but like, I don't see how you can fade him here, especially if Carlton Davis doesn't play for Tampa Bay. I'm not afraid of Jamel Dean or Sean Murphy bunting. Like, it's just a bad price.
It's crazy. And the other thing that's craziest about it, Adam, like, how does his price go from 5,700 to 4,900 after you post 30 points? Like, how does that happen?
Too much eggnog? I don't know.
It's got to be really, really strong. Like, that is crazy to me. And, like, you're talking about, if Carlton Davis is out, I know my guy, Murphy Bunting, like, he's probably going to go to the outside. Marv, they move him around the formation, and approximately 60% of the routes, he's going to see Dean and Bunting on the outside, which neither one of these guys has been any good. I mean, Dean and Bunting, since week 8, Dean has allowed 16 receptions on 24 targets, 114 pass rating, and 4 freaking touchdowns. Bunting's just as bad. Like, 25 receptions on 35 targets, a 131 passer rating. Like, Marv can eat them up. And, I get it, okay? If you don't want to play Stafford, he's getting in limited practices, whether he plays or he doesn't. If you don't want to play Stafford, because, yes, Tampa can pressure extremely well. Whoever is under center is going to be under duress. I understand not playing Stafford, because he takes another freaking shot. We don't know if he finishes the game. Does that make him a really good tournament play? Because here's the thing. If he does finish the game, you know they're going to chuck it deep. But I have concerns with that because their offensive line is just banged up, man. Ragnow is probably going to miss this game again. Taylor Decker is banged up. He's got a groin injury. He was limited on Wednesday, and then he was a DNP on Thursday. So we'll see if he suits up. Now, if he suits up, I feel a little bit better about Stafford, but I'm not going to fault anybody for fading Stafford, playing the weapons here, because Chase Daniel, if he's under center, like, the thing about Chase Daniel is we know that he's going to sit here and still chuck the ball. They're not going to be able to run versus Tampa. That is a fact. Marvin Jones is going to get a ton of targets, so if you wanted to just play the weapons on Detroit's side, I totally get it. But I think Stafford, man, he makes for a really, really interesting tournament play. But your thoughts on Stafford, and kind of walk us through the rest of the plays in this game.
Yeah, so, like, even if you worry about Stafford not finishing the game, like, it doesn't matter because Marvin Jones is, like, $1,500 underpriced. So, like, it's not like you're playing Marvin Jones at a premium price tag and then Stafford gets hurt and you're like, oh, crap. There are clearly pivots to this game, though. Like, Hockenson was awful last game, but I remember that game against Minnesota a couple weeks ago with Tampa where Kirk Cousins was under pressure like 48% of the time, and we saw Thielen and Jefferson, they weren't involved as much in the offense as they've been all year. We saw a lot of the tight ends. It was Irv Smith and Tyler Conklin combined for like 10 targets. CJ Ham had 3 targets. Dalvin Cook had 4 targets. If that's the case and Stafford's under pressure a lot here, I think we're going to see a lot of Hockenson, and then you can go to some Danny Amendola at 3,700. Again, this is a 3-game slate. He's, you know, probably going to see at the minimum 4 or 5 targets, probably more if this sets up as a game where, you know, the Lions have to throw 45 times. And that's just going to be, you know, Marvin Jones isn't running, you know, 30-yard streaks all the time, but he's also not running, you know, shorter routes like Amendola and Hockenson are. They use Hockenson in the screen game a lot. I think he's due for a bounce back here. You've talked about it a lot this year where teams just use the tight ends against Tampa Bay, and we've seen that many times. We saw it in the Saints game a couple weeks back, and we saw it with Minnesota a couple weeks ago where both Conklin and Irv Smith were really good in that game. So I think this could easily be a TJ Hockenson game. And, like, on this 3-game slate, you have some options at tight end. Like, you have Darren Waller on the slate. George Kittle might be back, and that's going to be really interesting. And then you have Mike Gesicki possibly back, Gronk on the other side of this game. So, like, for a three-game slate, tight end is really not that bad. So I don't think Hockenson's going to be, like, to a point where it's like, oh, you know, like the last Saturday slate where it was like you either play Fant or you play Robert Tonyan. Yeah, and then there's really nobody else that has a role. Like, all these tight ends on this slate pretty much have a role. Like, even Dan Arnold, he's had a solid role this year. Like,
ooh, we're going to get to him.
Right, this is a solid tight end slate for three games.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to get different. Like, all the tight ends you just mentioned, I think, could be more popular than Hockenson because, one, he just had a down game. People are worried about the quarterback play. I mean, there is a range of outcomes where we get a full game out of Stafford in this one. Like, that could happen. And if it does, Hockenson is going to be a primary attack point against a Tampa Bay team that's 25th in DVOA. Hockenson himself is 11th in red zone targets, 10th in targets inside the 10. So he's going to be in play because, like we're talking about, Adam, they can't run versus Tampa. Like, they're not going to be able to do that. I'm probably not that interested in a lot of the secondary options for Detroit. I mean, look, we talked about how bad these corners are, but Danny Amendola splitting some snaps in the slot with Mohamed Sanu, who's actually running as the other starting outside wide receiver. It's just a mess. Like, Marv's the only guy getting full run. Behind him for Detroit wide receivers, you got Sanu, who's playing in the inside and outside. You got Amendola, who's playing the slot. Agnew's involved. Cephas is involved. I mean, I just don't think that you have to get that ridiculously cute considering some of the options we'll get to that are in good spots, places that you can pay down for on guys that are going to have more prominent roles. So I'm probably just staying away from all these tertiary wide receivers for Detroit. It's really Marv, Hockenson. We haven't even talked about the run game for Detroit. If you're going to play a guy, I think it's Swift, but I mean, come on, Adam. Are you that... like, interested in him on a three-gamer? Like, I know that he's not going to carry a lot of roster percentage. Like, that's going to be a fact. Like, I don't think that he's going to be popular going up against Tampa, but can you play him here? Like, it's difficult for me.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about it. The running backs on the slate, meanwhile, aren't, like, the greatest. Like, there's not a lot of great matchups other than maybe two. And one of them's on the other side of this game. But, you know, Swift got the start last game, and Peterson was, like, involved in the first drive, and then it was all Swift the rest of the game. He got a handful of goal line carries. He scored twice. That's good to see. He'll probably get, you know, I guess I don't hate him if I think Stafford's going to be under pressure. Like, Swift could see 6-7 targets in this game. But from a pure, you know, per carry rushing the ball perspective, it might be a tough spot for him.
Well, and I worry, too. Like, I'm talking about the injuries to the offensive line, and they're going up against a top three defensive line in Tampa. Like, those are going to factor in. Like, if they had a healthy line, yeah, like, I'd be more interested in Swift in this spot, but I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball. If you're playing Swift, you're playing him for the passing game role, which he definitely has, but Tampa is a top five defense against pass-catching running backs anyway. Like, if you go and look at, like, volume metrics, yes, like, they're near the top, but then if you go to the game log, like, looking, they're not allowing big games to running backs in the passing game. If Swift pops off in the passing game, that's really what you're playing him for, and I just don't know if I can do that. I mean, because the other side of this game, like, you're talking about, how popular do you think Leonard Fournette is going to be? Like, I think he's going to be insanely popular in this game. We know that Detroit's run defense is terrible. I will not dispute that with anybody. Like, regardless of whatever you look at, they've allowed the fourth most rushing yards, most rushing TDs, fifth most receiving yards, most receiving touchdowns. Fournette's going to be the guy with Ronald Jones probably out. Like, he got all the red zone work. He ran the most routes, 21, compared to the closest guy behind him was LeSean McCoy. I think Fournette's going to be crazy, crazy popular. We haven't even talked about Tampa passing here. I think that you can play a Fournette. If you wanted to play him, then I'm probably not going to. If I'm playing Tom Brady, I'm not playing Fournette and vice versa. Like, I'll probably alternate my Fournette exposure because can he get there? Sure. Is the defense set up so he can just crush in this spot? Absolutely. The other thing about it, though, is Tampa is they're throwing at a top five clip, 59% in the red zone. Like, Fournette ran hot. He did not play well last week. They had some penalties and things like that. He got other opportunities at the goal line, so he sucked out last week. In a great matchup, I get playing Fournette. I'm not going to play him on the same teams that I play Tom Brady. I really, really love the Tampa passing attack here. What are your thoughts on Fournette before we get to Tampa as far as throwing the ball?
I mean, he's fine, but yeah, I think he will be popular. He definitely got lucky last week with the two touchdowns. Evans got tackled at the one, and then Fournette punched it in on one of them. But like, he got all the opportunities, which is really all you can ask for. The matchup's as good as you can get. The question is, like, is this a spot where, you know, in the first, like, Brady was this offense is terrible in the first half, and then the second half it was a lot of Brady throwing touchdowns, and of course Fournette had the 2 1-yard touchdowns, but if he doesn't get those, then he's absolutely terrible. He handled 17 of the 22 running back touches, which is good. Played around 66% of the snaps. I'm fine with him. I think he's, you know, matchup wise, maybe the best play on the slate. Especially because, like, there are some concerns with Miami with Gaskin back and Savon Ahmed playing well. We'll talk about that. It's just really comes down to how popular do you think he'll be, and hopefully Kyle Murray will help us with that as the week goes on. But it's hard not to like him from just the fact that he's going to get at worst 15 touches in one of the best matchups in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand playing him for that reason. On to Tampa passing, Brady is in a fantastic spot here. Like, Detroit does not have a corner on their roster right now that's healthy that can cover any of these guys. Like, Warrior, like, yes, could he stay with AB? Possibly Evans on the outside, sure, but even he hasn't been good. Since week 8, 41 targets, 25 receptions, 111 passer rating. I really, really love Tom Brady in this spot. Detroit can't pressure. We know Brady falls apart when teams can pressure. So I think Brady's going to have a lot of time in the pocket, as well as if we're talking about if their defense can pressure, then maybe some short fields here, especially like if Stafford goes out, doesn't play, what have you. Mike Evans and Godwin are my two favorite wide receivers. I think AB is in play. I do worry a little bit because Scotty Miller, not last week, but the week before, was cutting into his route some. I love Evans' matchup. Like, if he's going to see a lot of even a Warrior on the outside, much less Mike Ford, they've been moving Mike Evans around the formation, 30% approximately, playing at all different positions. Like, Mike Ford can't stay with this dude when he has him in coverage. Since 2018, a 72% catch rate, 117 passer rating. I think Godwin's in a good spot. Justin Coleman is hot trash in the slot. 33 targets, 29 receptions, 109 passer rating since week 8. If I'm picking two guys out of this, Evans and Godwin is where I go. I think that, look, if Brady goes nuclear, I think that you can actually, and I really think it's viable considering the prices of these guys and value on this three-gamer, you could even go Brady, Evans, Godwin, and AB and play for the nuclear game. Your lineup's going to be different. Each one of these guys catches a touchdown. If Brady goes for 360, 390, something like that, we've seen that in the range of outcomes for him. And if Fournette's going to be one of the most popular, hell, if he's going to be one of the highest-owned, if not the highest-owned guy on this three-gamer, it's good leverage, man. But tell me, if you're going to stack at least two of the guys here, is it Godwin and Evans for you, or are you going to go off the board and go Gronk, AB? Like, where are you going to go, and do you love Brady here?
Yeah, I agree with Godwin and Evans. You know, Godwin finally scored last week. He's primarily in the slot. Detroit's pretty much bad everywhere, but they do allow the fourth most fantasy points per game to slot receivers. And then we know the touchdown potential is there with Evans. Like, he was an inch away from scoring last week. Detroit's allowing touchdowns on just over 73% of their red zone trips against them, second highest rate in the NFL. They've also allowed the most red zone touchdowns in the NFL at 41. So Mike Evans is probably a really strong bet to score a touchdown here. And yeah, like, I love when a running back, like I've done it a lot with Dalvin Cook this year, where if he's popular, I like playing Cousins with Thielen and Jefferson. This is kind of the same thing. Only difference is, you know, it's a little bit more uncertain where the targets are going to go. But for the most part, that's why you can play a couple of them. I do like Brady with Godwin and Evans the most. You know, Gronk is fairly cheap. He's the fifth highest tight end, highest priced tight end on the slate. You just know that if he doesn't score, he's probably going to be pretty underwhelming. Although he's been getting end zone targets, which is good. He only caught three of his seven targets last game. But yeah, I do prefer Godwin and Evans the most from this Tampa Bay passing game. Probably not, like, I'll maybe mix in some AB, but probably not going anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a lot of interest in Gronk in this spot. Him and Braid have been cannibalizing each other, eating into each other's routes. If you're playing Gronk, I mean, I think the ceiling is hard cap for him. You're looking at, like, max. I mean, you're playing him hoping if he gets two touchdowns, he's most likely, even if he does hit, like, 5 for 50 in a touchdown. And look, on a three-gamer, I get it. I don't love the matchup for him. I mean, Detroit's actually been pretty good against opposing tight ends. 13th in DVOA versus the position. I think that the wide receivers are in fantastic spots here. So I love Brady, love all the wide receivers. I think there's a lot of different ways that you could stack this game and get different. But any other thoughts before we move on?
Nope.
All right, man. San Francisco is heading to Arizona. The over-under is set at 49. The Cardinals are favored by 5. Adam, what do you think about this game?
So we have C.J. Beathard starting at quarterback. 5K if you want to go there and spend up elsewhere. He's the cheapest quarterback available. I mean, Beathard's not the worst option in fantasy. This is going to be a pace-up game. He runs, I mean, last when he started a couple years ago, he was running a lot, and the Cardinals allow like the fourth most rushing yards per game to opposing quarterbacks. You know, they play a lot of man defense, and they blitz a lot. So what do you think about Beathard?
I actually like him. I'm glad you brought him up here because I think this game is really interesting. I do have some interest in Beathard. He's shown, like, he can put up 20 to 25 points. Like, we've seen that in his range of outcomes. I'm not worried so much about the Arizona Cardinals secondary. Like, is Patrick Peterson good? That's fine. Like, yes, he is. But my whole thing with Beathard is you're going to get rushing equity. The Arizona, like, their pass defense is kind of banged up right now. Like Kirkpatrick's been missing some practices, whether he plays or not. I think that there are other spots where you can you can exploit this Cardinals defense. I mean, here's the thing. We know that Ayuk has been balling out. He's definitely in play in this game, getting a ton of targets. If Kittle is back, I think that brings C.J. Beathard more into the conversation. Like, does Kittle have to play for you to play Beathard? And if not, who are you going to stack him with, Adam?
I don't think he has to play because a lot of the reason I like Beathard is the fact that he's going to run a little bit and the fact that he's 5K. And Brandon Ayuk, they've been scheming. Like, I've seen people worry about the quarterback, potential quarterback change for Brandon Ayuk. And, like, this is all scheme-based with the way he's been targeted. Like, it's not a Nick Mullins thing or a Garoppolo thing or a Beathard thing. It's all Kyle Shanahan, and he even said so as much. Like, we just have to scheme ways to get this guy the ball. He has you look at his target shares over the last, I wrote it up in the snaps and targets article at FTN. It's ridiculous. So he has the last, let's see, 5 games, I believe it is. His target shares are ridiculous. It's since week 8, 31.7, 36.3, 23, 35.8, and 25%. Ooh. He's averaging 12.5 targets per game during that span. Like, it's totally a Kyle Shanahan scheme-based thing. So even if Kittle's back, like, I think he's getting at least 10 targets in this game. I'm not worried about Patrick Peterson. Like, yeah, he's good, but, like, he had trouble with Alshon last week. He had, like, 2 defensive pass interference penalties on Alshon. I believe he gave up a touchdown to Greg Ward in coverage. So, like, I'm not worried about Patrick Peterson like I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And then, yeah, like, you can obviously stack them together, but, like, if Kittle doesn't play, like, I don't think that really – It helps Beathard a ton, obviously, because Kittle's, you know, what, the second best tight end in the league behind Kelce when healthy, I would say. Maybe you can make the case he's number one. And it's not even just that. Like, Richie James is a little banged up right now. We obviously know Debo's not going to be there. So they're hurting right now. The question is, do you go anywhere else? Because like Kendrick Bourne only played like 50% of their snaps last game, but he was relatively productive against Dallas.
A lot of that came on that Hail Mary bomb.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't get there if he doesn't catch that at the very end of the game. Like, he's staring at like 6, maybe 7 points if he doesn't catch that last one. So my whole thing about Bourne is I don't know what kind of ceiling he's got. Like,
yeah.
The other thing about him, if you're playing Beathard, I think that you could even stack him with one of the running backs in this spot. Like,
well, I mean, we have the running back revolving door again in San Francisco, where looks like we're gonna have maybe a lead back because Mostert's on IR, his season's over. Jeff Wilson was the lead guy once he left. Like, Mostert got 7 of the first 9 running back carries in that game against Dallas. Then he got hurt, and then it was all Jeff Wilson. I don't think they're going to want to mix in McKinnon. They haven't done so. The question is, does Tevin Coleman get like 9 carries? I don't understand how this like their whole team has been hurt all year, but it's been like their backfield. It's like nobody's been hurt for the year really, but it's like somebody comes back and immediately they get hurt. It's absurd.
So I actually love Jeff Wilson in this spot. I'm not that worried. And I say all of this, and Shanahan's going to come out here and give Tevin Coleman like 45 freaking carries. But I think that what we've been seeing out of the last few weeks, I think this could be the Jeff Wilson show this week. And I'm not worried about the Arizona run defense. Like, their defensive line is 27th in second level yards allowed. I really, really love him in this spot. Like, even last week, Adam, he ran 20 routes versus McKinnon's 10. So even the pass game work for McKinnon wasn't a ton. You look at Wilson, he got 16 carries. He got 5 red zone rushes. Mostert got 3. McKinnon and Coleman didn't even factor in there. I think that we could get full run Jeff Wilson in a spot where you go all the way back to week 1 and you look at how Shanahan attacked this defense. Jimmy threw 2 touchdowns in that game. Do you know where both of those touchdowns went?
No.
It went to the running backs, Adam. Like, Mostert caught one. This is the game where Mostert broke off and went 95 receiving yards. McKinnon had the other receiving touchdown. I love Jeff Wilson in this spot. Like, especially, like, we know Brandon Ayuk is going to carry some roster percentage. Like, he's going to be popular for all the reasons we stated. You can play Beathard, and if people are going to play Kittle and he gets popular, you can play Beathard and play Ayuk. Play Beathard and Ayuk and Wilson. You can play Beathard and play Kittle and Wilson with him. Like, there are a lot of different ways to stack up this game, and you're playing Beathard for not only the pass game, but his rushing equity as well. I love Jeff Wilson. Like, he is one of my favorite plays out of this 3-gamer because, dear God, dude, we've seen – if he's going to get all the work, you're looking at a guy that can get 20 to 25 carries, especially if Shanahan wants to freaking slow this down and he wants to just run the damn ball and keep Arizona's fast-paced offense off the freaking field. Because the other thing about this, man, we haven't even talked about yet, their defense is banged up. Like, Sherman has been DMP'd all week so far with a calf injury. Jimmy Ward's logged DMPs. Like, I think that could be the way that they go. Jeff Wilson is going to be really tough for me not to play. He's extremely affordable. He's going to be, I mean, where do you think Jeff Wilson's going to carry, like, what? Like, a quarter of the ownership that Fournette's going to on this game, 3-gamer?
I would imagine, yeah. And there's, like, even with Mostert out, there's still plenty of people out there that don't trust Shanahan with a running back. And, like, worst case scenario for Jeff Wilson is he gets, like, 12 carries, but 4 of them come at the goal line and he scores twice. Like, that, like, he's getting the goal line carries no matter what, because he was getting goal line carries when this team had, you know, multiple running backs. What was it, the Patriots game? They were without Mostert and Coleman, yeah. And everybody thought it was going to be a McKinnon game, and Jeff Wilson went absolutely crazy. So I don't think they want to give McKinnon more than, like, 5 carries, if that.
You look at Jeff Wilson's price, too, and I think that he could get overlooked. Like, if Edmonds is out, like, we haven't even talked about that. He's been missing practice. If he's out, Drake is probably going to get some steam again. And you look at the pricing, dude, like, so Fournette's at $5,500. Gaskin's at $5,300. Drake is at $5,200. Wilson is sitting there at $5,000, and Edmonds is right below him at $4,600. I think that Wilson's going to carry the least amount of ownership because people are worried, like we're talking about, Shanahan running backs. The thing about it is, dude, Shanahan's this backfield has equity. It has upside and ceiling. And if we get one guy out of it, oh my gosh, and he's going to carry less roster percentage than the other 3 to 4 guys around him? Yeah, sign me up, man. I'm in it. Especially, he's leverage off of Ayuk. He's leverage off of Kittle. Like, I love Wilson. There's so many different ways to slice this up about how it's going to be difficult for me not to have a lot of exposure to Jeff Wilson this week.
Yeah, I hear you. Cardinal side. Like, we know where this offense is coming from, right? It's Kyler, it's Hopkins. But then there's some interesting pieces from this game because you seem to get really excited when I mentioned Dan Arnold, but I mean, he's got 3 touchdowns over the last 3 games. He's, you know, been making a lot of catches, like plays down the field, which is nice. And he's 200? He's the cheapest tight end that you can really feel comfortable about. Because, like, other dude, below him, it's Jordan Reed, who might lose his role with Kittle there, then it's the Miami tight ends and Brate.
I love Arnold. I love him in this game. I mean, his price is fantastic. He's got upside, Adam. Like, you look at the last few weeks, and 8 points, 10 points, 20 points. Before New England, he had 7. If he gets you 7 points, you're happy. If he gets you 20 points, you're streaking through the freaking streets after Christmas. Like, that's a fact. Like, Arnold, the thing I love about him is that he could have this role all to himself, Adam. Max Williams is banged up. DMP's with an ankle injury. Daryl, the other tight end, DMP's with a hamstring injury. We could see full run Dan Arnold in this game. And weeks 13 through 15... Do you know who leads the Arizona Cardinals in deep targets, Adam? It ain't Hopkins. It's Dan Arnold, baby. 4 deep targets to Hopkins, 3. Like, what I'm talking about, San Francisco's defense is banged up. Like, their safeties are banged up. The corners are banged up. Dan Arnold could crush in this spot. I love stacking Kyler in this spot. There's so many different ways you can go. You could triple stack him because if Kyler goes for 3 touchdowns, we've seen that in his range of outcomes. It's Hopkins, it's Christian Kirk, who I love in this game, because Sherman can't stay with him, and if Sherman's out, he gets Emmanuel Mosley, who's been a turnstile this year.
Yeah, San Francisco secondary has been very exploitable with all the injuries. I don't want to mention it, but like on a 3-game slate, if he just kind of fits into your lineup, there could be worse options than Larry Fitzgerald.
Well, so I'm worried about Larry. DMP's the last 2 weeks or 2 days with the groin injury. If Larry plays, could you play him? Or even if he's out, we know it's the Andy Isabella show, but is he in play for you? He's not for me, because I think this passing game could go through Hopkins, could go through Kirk, and Dan Arnold. Like, I don't have a lot of interest in Isabella.
Yeah.
It's really Dan Arnold for me, but
dude, Dan Arnold, you mentioned his deep targets. He leads all tight ends in average target distance this year. Like, he's legitimately a big play threat in this offense. I think he is going to be, like, if I'm not playing Waller or Hockenson, it's probably just going to be Dan Arnold for me at tight end. Like, I guess you can sprinkle in Kittle. We just don't know if he's going to play yet. But he's getting end zone targets. He's getting deep targets, and that's what we want for upside, especially at tight end.
I love him, man. I love him in this spot. I think that he's a fantastic play. You could full game stack this baby. Like, I'm fine with you going, well, like, if you're going to the San Francisco side, if you want to go Kittle, if you want to go Ayuk, Wilson, I'm talking about. I don't really have any interest in Coleman and McKinnon. You could even play the Cardinals defense. I mean, Cardinals defense has been, and you wanted to go full game stack, people say, okay, well, it doesn't correlate well, blah, blah, blah. You can have high-scoring games and still the defense get there, dude. Like, Philly, last week, they scored 59 freaking total points together, and the Cardinals defense got 10 points. Week before that, they got 18 points. I mean, really, they've been fantastic. They blitz a ton. They've gotten 14 sacks over the last 2 games. I think that you can go full game stack here and even include the Cardinals defense. It's going to be different because a lot of people are not going to go that way. You can still have a fantastic day from your defense in fantasy, even if the point totals go up. Because the other side of that is, if the Cardinals get a pick six early, Beathard's going to start airing it out, baby. Like, there's a lot of different ways they can still get there, man. I love Arnold. I love a lot of different plays out of this game because I feel like this game is going to shoot out. I love it. It's pace up. It's going to have scoring. There's so many different ways you can go. Like,
also, we didn't mention this. It's a home game for San Francisco, technically. Sharing that stadium. I forgot about that.
Oh my god, that's so funny. I didn't even think about that, dude. I know we kind of glossed over it. Is Kenyon Drake even in play for you? He's not for me. Like, I don't want any exposure.
If Edmonds is out, he is, but like last week Edmonds was expected to be
a trap, dude.
Yeah, he's not like a core player or anything, but like Edmonds, the problem is if Edmonds plays, like, they said Edmonds last week heading into the game against the Eagles was expected to be limited, and then Drake ended up leaving with a minor injury and came back later, but then Edmonds got more work. So I don't know. Like, he's only in play if Edmonds is ruled out for me, and even then it's not like my favorite play. Like, the 49ers, if there've been anything salvaged by their defense, it's been their run defense. It's still been pretty solid. Like, I know Pollard had a huge game against him last week, but a lot of that was in the receiving game, too. Like, he had that awesome 40-yard touchdown run.
Drake does not have Tony Pollard juice. No. That is not the same thing.
Right. So.
Like, he does not have the big playability. I think that he'll get popular. I'm not really that interested in Kenyon Drake. The matchup is tough. There's been spots where I've been heavy into Drake, and then
Kyler's healthy now, so, like, the targets aren't there anymore, and maybe he starts to lose some of the goal line carries.
I mean, he didn't get a lot of work last week. They kind of buried him under a less than 100% Chase Edmonds. I don't want any Drake here. All right, so the last game for this three-gamer, Miami heads to Vegas. They are favored by 3. The over-under set at 47.5. Adam, what do you think here?
Once again, we got to monitor the Dolphins' offensive injuries. Devontae Parker, Mike Gesicki, and Jakeem Grant all didn't play last week. Parker's been limited with the hamstring. Gesicki's been limited with his shoulder. They were limited last week, and it sounded like they all had a chance to play. And then, around 11:30 Sunday morning, they all get ruled out. So that'll obviously change the slate entirely if they get ruled out again. If not, it's interesting because we know the Raiders' defense is exploitable. Devontae Parker, with Preston Williams out, has been just a monster in terms of end zone targets, and his target, we know his splits without Preston Williams since last year have been fantastic. So if Parker's active, I definitely have interest in him. Would I feel better about it if Tua wasn't the quarterback? Sure, but Tua's been better lately. It's just they haven't asked him to air the ball out, whereas Fitzpatrick, like, he throws it regardless. And then we have the backfield, because Savon Ahmed coming off a huge game, 122 yards and a touchdown. I think that was the first 100-yard rusher Miami's had in 2 years. But now Myles Gaskin's been activated off the COVID list. This is interesting because Miami's used one running back all year, right? Whether it was Myles Gaskin to start the year, then he got hurt, and then it was Savon Ahmed, and then Gaskin came back the one game before landing on COVID. It was the Bengals game. He had 23 touches, and then he was out, and then it was Ahmed again. It was DeAndre Washington was the lead back when they were both out for one game. So it's like they have wanted to use one running back no matter what. But at the same time, I feel like Savon Ahmed's earned a larger role right now. So that's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be one of the more intriguing pieces of the slate, because a running back against the Raiders is one of the best matchups in fantasy, but I feel like Gaskin is still at worst the 1A, but, and he's cheap enough to where it's like he doesn't need the 20 touches he's been getting. But I mean, am I wrong? Has Savon Ahmed, I feel like he deserves a larger role with how he's played.
Yeah,
we'll see if the Dolphins feel that way.
I don't disagree at all, man. I think it's a really interesting point. I think there's a lot of different ways they could go. They've wanted one running back, Gaskin. The thing about it with all the COVID stuff is we just don't know, man. Like, we don't know how it's affecting, like,
conditioning,
players,
man.
Yeah, dude. Like, it's one of the unknowns that we can't quantify here. So I think that Gaskin is in play, like, as well as Augment. Like, I like both of them in this spot. The Raiders have allowed the seventh most rushing yards on the season. We talked about, like, they want one guy. If you're running multiple lineups, like, I think you hedge it and you play Augment in one, you play Gaskin in the other. Right. But, like, if you're picking one guy out of this, I mean, really monitor pregame reports. If it looks like Gaskin's going to be a go, dude, then yeah. We've also seen guys that have had no symptoms from this stuff. So if Gaskin's not going to be popular here because people are worried about it, the matchup is fantastic. Like, it is
Miami is going to run the ball 25 to 35 times in this game. Like, that's – unless they get behind, which I don't – I think this game will be competitive, but I don't think Miami is going to be in a situation where they're down 17-0 or anything like that. I think playing both makes a lot of sense. Obviously not in the same lineup, but, like, just hedging. Because if there is a concern of Myles Gaskin with his conditioning in his first game back, I think they could both get, like – do you remember the Bills-Patriots game earlier in the year where both – it was one of the few games where Buffalo could establish a run, and both Singletary and Moss had 14 carries. I could see a similar usage like that if they're worried about – and if they're kind of cautious with Gaskin coming back. I could see them both getting 14 carries. And look, 14 carries and maybe two targets against Vegas is enough at 55 or 56 and 5,300.
Well, and the other thing about it is if Gaskin gets the money touches in the red zone, like if he gets the goal line totes over Ahmed, then like we were talking about earlier, this mid 5K running back range is fantastic. And there are great leverage spots. Like, if you're talking about Fournette and Drake getting the steam and being the popular guys out of this range, dude, just push me to Gaskin, Ahmed, push me to Jeff Wilson for the leverage. Like, I will play those guys over chalky running backs on a three-game slate all freaking day, man, and especially if they are in fantastic spots. Like, both of the running backs are definitely in fantastic spots. And moving over to the other side of the ball before we get to passing attacks here, like, dude, like, Josh Jacobs is in a crush spot here. Miami's run defense has not been fantastic. Like, you can run on Miami. If you look at the last five, or since week eight, they are 23rd in explosive run rate allowed. You can run on them. And Jacobs is coming off, like, he looks like he's fully healthy. He's coming off of a week where he got a ton of work. Like, they just gave him freaking 29 touches versus the Chargers. The week before that, 16 touches. Like, that's fantastic. And the way that you – here's the thing. A less than healthy Carr throwing against this secondary, is that really the way that we think that John Gruden's going to want to attack this team? I think they could just put the ball on the ground and run, and Josh Jacobs gets freaking 30 touches in this game and shreds this defense. But I think, I mean, tell me I'm wrong, Adam. Like, do you like Jacobs in this spot, or like, how popular do you think he's going to get as well?
I mean, I don't think we should be projecting any running back on the slate to get more touches than Josh Jacobs, or at least carries. So there's definitely that. And yeah, Miami, the way you beat them is via the run. So I'm fine with him. He didn't look good last week for the most part. He had like a 120 yard rush, and then he just couldn't get anything inside the 5 yard line, which was, probably tilting for a lot of people. But for me, like, in that price range, I know it's not the same position, but in that price range in general, like, I want to play Brandon Ayuk. I want to play some of the Tampa receivers. So it's like, I'm fine with Jacobs, but, like, I still – obviously you're playing two running backs and maybe three if you flex one, but you mentioned it. Like, you have Fournette, you have Jeff Wilson, you have these Miami running backs. So I don't think Jacobs is – even with the fact that he should get the most touches out of all these running backs, I still don't think he's, like, a must. I don't know what else – like, do we have to say anything about Darren Waller? Like, he's – getting like a 30% target share every game. He's really good. Like, I play him if you want, obviously.
Is there merit to fading him here?
Like I said, tight end is actually sneaky good on this three-game slate.
Yep.
If Kittle's active, you have Hockenson. If Gesicki's back, you have Gronk. We mentioned Dan Arnold. And even if, like, Gesicki is out and Devontae Parker's out, you could make the case for like Durham Smythe at 2,800. Like Cameron Bray is a, you know, might get four targets. Like it's even the low end guys aren't like the worst option. So I do think there's, especially at 7K, there's definitely merit to fading him. But like at the same time, if you want to play him, you know that he's getting, you know, if this team throws the ball 35 times, Darren Waller is getting at least 10 of those targets.
The thing about it is that Darren Waller's 7K. Right. He's coming off of a game where, look, he got 33 points, but if you look at the outside of the last two of the last three, he got 33 points, 48 points in week 13. Everybody, it is very, very fresh in everybody's minds of how he could break a slate. If that doesn't happen, what is the other range of outcomes for Waller? Like outside of those two games in the last three, here's his game logs for the previous like 5 to 6, 7 games. 14 points, 6 points, 21 points, 6, 13, 7, 17, 15, 16. If he's more in the 15 or 16 range, you could save 2 to 3K on this slate. Play Hockenson, who has 20-point upside. Play Gesicki in a spot where nobody will want to play him. Play Dan freaking Arnold, who got freaking 20 points in recent weeks. Like, he has a 20-point game in week 13. And we're talking about it, like that defense is banged up. You save all of this salary not playing a really popular Darren Waller, and people are just, they don't want to pay down for tight end. They don't want to go to the other guys because of like perceived upside. And yes, could Darren Waller break the slate? Sure, he could do that. The matchup is not great for him. If we're talking about Derek Carr's banged up in this game, the secondary is good. They've limited opposing tight ends. There's a lot of merit to fading Darren Waller, because even if he does have a fantastic game in this one, if you play a tight end and you save 2 to 3K in salary that can get close to him, or hell, match him in production, because if he has a 13 to 15 point game, there are tight ends in this slate that are crazy cheaper that can match him in production, and you're paying up at other spots. So I'm more in fading for Darren Waller. If I'm playing three max in this slate, maybe he makes one team. He's probably not making any of them, but if I do play him, he's not going to be on more than one of my teams. Am I wrong, Adam?
I don't think so. Are we playing either of the quarterbacks in this game? Derek Carr practice in full. Tua, no. Like I would only consider if Parker and Gesicki are active, and we'll see about that. But like we mentioned, Beathard at 5K, like Derek Carr's $100 more expensive. He's 5,100. And Carr has been mostly good this year. The matchup is not good, obviously. But like at the end of the day, like we can't play Brady or Kyler in every lineup. I mean, we can, but any interest in those guys?
Dude, not really. I mean, this the way that I project this game and how it possibly goes, I don't have a lot of interest here. It's the lowest over-under of any of these games. The spread is close. I just think, like, if you're running three lineups, and this is the way I usually approach, I'm a single-entry, 3MX kind of guy. I mean, how does one of these quarterbacks make your 3MX? Like, I love Brady. Stafford, if he plays, is going to be a really good tournament option. The ceiling is there. The defense is going to give it up versus him if he stays and plays the entire game. Kyler is in your top three. And Beathard is fourth for me. Like,
right, I agree.
These quarterbacks just, they don't make it for me.
If I were to play one, it would be Derek Carr. I just don't think Miami wants Tua to throw the ball more than like 26, 20. Like they want him to throw, and Baker's played outstanding, but they want him to throw the amount Baker's kind of thrown this year for the most part.
Yeah, agreed. And that's, I just don't think the game script is going to be there. The secondaries are really, really good. We haven't even talked about the receivers for the Raiders. I mean, if I'm going to play one of them, it's Nelson Agholor, but I don't even know if he can win that well versus Xavier Howard, who's playing extremely well. Byron Jones has not been in recent weeks, but
I think he can win against Byron Jones, but not Howard with the way Howard's playing.
No. Howard and Needham have been playing extremely well, and we've talked about if you're going to attack Miami in recent weeks or even towards the beginning of the season, it was via the slot. But, dude, like since week 8, Needham's been playing really, really well, like 67 passer rating since week 8, 26 receptions on 41 targets. I think it's really, it's the ground games for both of these teams that I'm really going to gravitate to, because I just don't see the ceiling out of the pass game options. I think this game, I won't be surprised, Adam, to tell you the truth. I won't be surprised if this game hits the under. It's really slow, and it's a lot of the running backs in this spot. But I mean, do you see anything different? Like, could you see in the range of outcomes, could this game shoot out? I don't see it.
It's unlikely, especially if Miami's missing those pass catchers. Like, and they get Myles Gaskin back, so you think they're going to want to run the ball even more, if possible.
Any Miami wide receivers in play for you? Like, would you go play Bowden?
Yeah, you can definitely play Lynn Bowden again if these guys are out. I mean, he's 3,900. He didn't have the huge game we might have wanted, but he still had 7 targets. He got a carry, so you'll take the 8 opportunities at under 4K. I just think with it sounding like they both, like some of these guys had a chance to play last week, I'd be kind of surprised. I know it's a shorter week, but I'd be kind of surprised if they were all out. I think the question is, before we get out of this game, like, what happens if one of these guys, like, what happens if only Parker plays? Do you just say, okay, I'm only playing Devontae Parker? Or what if only Gesicki plays? Do you say, okay, you can still play Lynn Bowden? Like, if only one of them play, I think you can still go to Lynn Bowden at 3,900. But if two of them play, you know, it's probably not going to be a place I go.
Yeah, I mean, I just,
The Raiders are bad, man. They're allowing scores on like 51% of their drives.
No, you're right.
Like, they're really bad.
You're right. I mean, here's the thing. Parker, he was a surprise inactive. I know a lot of people thought he was going to play last week. My whole thing is, what does he really have the ceiling with Tua? I mean, the last few weeks, have we really seen that high of a ceiling considering all the other receiving options? If he was in the 4K range, like, if his price was broken, or if he was like 4,800, 4,700, and he was priced more around like Marvin Jones or Aguilar, then could I have more interest in Parker? But at 5,500, like, I mean, hell, I'll just play Marvin Jones for cheaper. I'll just play AB in a better matchup. I'll play Chris Godwin and get up to him. Like, I have a really, really hard time running with Devontae Parker in this spot. Like, I mean, with Tua, dude, here's the thing. Like, outside of the Kansas City game, so Cincinnati, I know he saw a lot of William Jackson. I understand that. But 7 points.
He's only had one real ceiling game with Tua, and it was the Denver game. Because Jets game was with Fitzpatrick.
Even 18 points. 18 right. points with that.
And that Jets game was with Ryan Fitzpatrick under center.
Yep. I don't think the ceiling's there, man. Like, I think it
could be, because remember that William Jackson, like, it doesn't count because William Jackson played great, but like, he saw like 6 end zone targets in that game. So if he catches 2 of them, then it's a better game. I think he can still get, you know, 4 or 5 end zone targets. Like, if he's active and Gesicki's out, like, who else? Like, I know they throw to Durham Smythe and Sheen in the red zone, but it's like, Parker gets so many end zone looks without Preston Williams there, and you add the fact that Gesicki could be out. Like, I'm going to play some Devontae Parker if he's in and Gesicki's out. If they're both in, I'll still consider him, but it won't be as exciting. Like, there's still Antonio Brown under him, and we, of course, Marvin Jones is still just a better play regardless at 4,900, which I still don't understand. Like, I probably won't understand that till next Christmas, to be honest. Like, show some damn respect for the GOAT, will you?
It's crazy, man. The pricing this week, I think there's a lot of different ways. There's so much value. Like, this is not a tight 3-game slate where you're like, ooh, I got to play these thin plays. Like, if they're all out, do I play Isaiah Ford? I'm not there, man. Like, I think that there's so many different ways to go at tight end and value plays that I don't feel squeezed. Like, I'm like having to try to force in one of these super thin guys to make the rest of the lineup work. Like, if he goes off, that's fine. But if my 5K guy goes off and he gets 20 to 25 points, I don't care that some other 3K guy got 15. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. All right, everyone. That is the 3-game slate for this Saturday. Again, happy holidays to everyone. Adam and I are going to be back rolling through the main slate for the DFS game-by-game breakdown. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.